Hello, and welcome to the Three Links Oddcast, your podcast for all things having to do with Odd Fellowship. And now, here are your hosts.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Three Links Oddcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Domeniak.
I'm one of your other hosts, Ainsley Heilig.
And I'm your third host, Toby Hansen. And you know what, Brother Ainsley? I'm somewhat puzzled.
Why is that?
Well, I go to Lodge and they've got those posters that have all those symbols on them, and I know they're important somehow, but I don't know what any of them mean. How will I ever find out?
You know, it's a good reason you just brought that up, because the Heart and Hand Institute has a brand new release, The Emblems of Odd Fellowship. And when I say brand new, I mean the art is brand new, but the words were written and originally released in the late 90s, but have been long out of print. So this little gem of a book has been brought back to life with new art, and the words are by esteemed author John Michael Greer, and you could pick it up on Amazon or head on over to heartandhandinstitute.com and purchase it directly over there.
Wow, that's awesome. I will never again wonder about the meaning of the stone easel. The Heart in Hand Institute, they have a bunch of information and stuff about Odd Fellowship. Check it out today. Well, we're so happy to be brought to you by the Heart in Hand Institute. And boy, do we ever have a jam-packed show for you today. We've got not one, not two, not three, but four guests all joining us from the grand jurisdiction of Minnesota. So we're going to start with some introductions. And Brother Ace, why don't we start with you? Give us your titles and background in Odd Fellowship.
Titles?
Yeah, titles. You've got a couple of those.
List 23 of them off at different times. I've been a member since 1978, joined when I was 16, been a family thing. Didn't get involved with the Grand Lodge level to the 1990s or thereabouts, and jumped in with some financing for our lodge, needing to buy a building and whatnot. And then from there, I got thrown in on the finance committee because I was such a whiz with numbers. And from there, we moved on into running for Grand Warden in 2006, being elected to Grand Master in 2008. Went through the encampment degrees, been a past patriarch, past department commander, was elected as the Grand Lodge representative in 2006, been there ever since. Yeah, I've been around, seen a few things.
Yeah, well, good for you, and thank you for joining us. And let's start with you, Brother Gary. Tell us about your experience in Odd Fellowship and any other fraternal groups you might belong to.
My name is Gary Thomas. I'm the current Noble Grand of Northfield Lodge 50 in Northfield, Minnesota. Coming up this April will be a year since I've been a member. It's been fantastic so far. And then in the past, as far as other fraternal organizations I've been a member of, I joined the Masonic Lodge, where I grew up in Owatonna, Minnesota, started each East Lodge number 33 when I was a senior in high school. So I've been a member now for almost, this April will be 28 years. And a week or so later from that will be a year that I'll have been an Odd Fellow. So April's kind of a big year for me. So.
Oh, wonderful.
Big month. So,
all right. And Brother Nick.
So I've been a Mason since 2006. I'm really a baby Odd Fellow. I started pretty much when Gary did. We all kind of went through together. And now I'm currently sitting in Friendship Lodge number 50 as the conductor / inner guard. So they've already given me a nickname, which, you know, you're part of a group when they do that, because I'm now called Two Chains. So there you go. That's the way to be, right? It's like, you know, you're a part of a group when you've got the nickname. So, so I'm very proud and happy to be working with so many great Minnesota Odd Fellows.
And now, Sunny, tell us about your experience.
Yes. Hi. Well, I'm Sunny, and I joined the Odd Fellows very recently, just last October. I've only been in Minnesota for about a year. I moved here last February, and my partner was actually in. He ended up wanting to join the Masons since he had some family members that were. He actually found more family members as well after he joined that were part of it. And I wanted something similar, but the Order of the Eastern Star wasn't quite my vibe, and I wanted something that was more co-ed. And I heard about Odd Fellowship. It was very similar. I actually listened to your guys' podcast and also the Modern Goat Rider podcast as well, and ended up reaching out to the Grand Lodge, and I got the packet in the mail. Tried to get some of the contact info. Struggled a little bit with the contact info that was there to get to someone, but ended up on Reddit and was able to get in contact with the lodge that way. Was invited out, yeah, thanks to Nick. He was over there on Reddit. I actually created the account to do it, but that's what brought me over to Odd Fellowship.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all for joining us here on an episode of the podcast. Now, Ainsley, let's start with you. I believe you've got a question here.
Yeah, so Ace is our, I guess, our senior member of the Minnesota representation here. And so he is also on the communications committee with us. So we talk about communications a lot. And so I feel like this is definitely one of those success stories of how the process is supposed to go whenever the Grand Lodges are doing their end of what they're supposed to do when somebody contacts them. So Ace, please explain to us how that process went and how it, you know, obviously this is the way it ought to be going and it worked and it here's the fruits of the labor right in front of us. So yeah, why don't you give us a little bit of the what you had to do?
Sure. So yes, it was a success story, but it definitely takes the work and the communication to make it all happen. As Sunny alluded to, there was some snags in the process, but I think maybe we design it that way just to make sure that you are interested and want to make it track it down. So that very well could be the reason why we do the mess that we do. But eventually, the Red Wing Oddfellows, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, reached out to the Grand Lodge of Minnesota, or the, and let me get my stuff together. The Red Wing Masons reached out to the Oddfellows to, wanting to us to present a program to them. They have an education seminar, and Gary will allude to that a little bit, that they bring in groups to help part of their meeting as a as an education process. From there, the communications came to me. We tried to organize an event. It didn't fit into their schedule, so we waited 6 months later and tried it again. We made a presentation. Four of us traveled 2 hours to Red Wing, did a presentation on Odd Fellowship, basically went through our Minnesota website, explaining on the six or seven different programs that are available. The three of us each did a presentation and a little snippet talking about the benefits of Odd Fellowship and what it means to us. And yeah, it was a great little process. I think there was like 38 people in attendance. Being that they were already Masons, they already understood the fraternal process, so that part worked out really well for us too. So it was a quite an easy sell to sell the Odd Fellowship to the original core group.
Now, Brother Gary, where do you come into this? Were you one of the guys who was at that initial meeting in Red Wing?
Yes, I was actually the one that reached out. I was a master of the lodge at the time. My third, my fourth, well, I had two stints of being master of that lodge. That was my second year of my second stint. And I was trying to generate some, to try to get some interest to bring, use the lodge for more events than just business meetings. And so we offered some educational, different educational nights. You know, guys would show up, you'd give them, a turkey sandwich or something, and then we'd get together in the lodge room afterwards and have talk. So the Odd Fellows is something that's always interested me. And years ago in Minnesota, we have something called the Lodge Educational Officer. It's also at the Grand Lodge level. You know, the symbol is the lamp of knowledge. And so our job is to come up with interesting things for the lodge to speak on. The Odd Fellowship has always been something that's been really interested to our members. In the past, we've tried to line some things up and just didn't work. I was able to reach out to the Grand Secretary, Alex of Minnesota, of Odd Fellows, and he was said that we'll discuss this at our sessions, which he did. And then he got back to us. It took a couple months to line everything up. And sure enough, Ace came along with John Sonic, who was the Grand Master at the time, and Dave Sebesta, and they put on a fantastic show. We had, like I said, just shy of 40 people there, had a great meal and great fellowship, and generated a lot of conversation for months to come. So that was my involvement.
It's kind of interesting, having been a Mason in Pennsylvania, still am, but I mean, I'd been in there first, and I was invited to join the Odd Fellows, and I was interested, and I went into that, but I never heard a peep about Odd Fellowship in my Masonic Lodge or at any Masonic function in Pennsylvania. It was like the organization didn't exist. At least that was until a certain point when we had a Grand Master who spent his time saying, we don't want to end up like the Odd Fellows. And that was the most I ever heard the Odd Fellows mentioned in Freemasonry. So I'm kind of curious how your group of Masons took an interest in other fraternal groups and bringing them in. Why the Odd Fellows? And did you bring in any other ones like the Knights of Pythias, or I don't know, the left-handed hammer holders, or you know, whatever else might be around?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In Minnesota, it's kind of fraternal groups used to be kind of the lifeblood of the state, but for the most part, we don't have any Knights of Pythia anymore. Most of the other fraternal benefits companies have all essentially turned into insurance companies. So really, the only ones that we have left are Odd Fellows, Freemasonry, and the Knights of Columbus, and, you know, of course, the other animal bodies, you know, that Groucho talked about. And so, you know, it's one of those that... You're absolutely right. You know, in my Masonic Lodge, no one discussed Odd Fellowship at all. I mean, either it was, I've never heard of them, or there was a certain amount of recalcitrance, right? Concern that if you're going to have somebody joining both of those, it's going to create, you know, a you can't serve two masters problem, right? And usually it's that jealousy thing, I think. And that's really what, you know, when Gary contacted me about, hey, we're going to be doing this interesting educational meeting, why don't you come on down? You know, I was absolutely, you know, I was excited because I had not heard of the Odd Fellows other than seeing the building in downtown Minneapolis with the 100 degrees Fahrenheit on it. So I was absolutely excited to see it. So
I would ask just one follow-up question. I was curious, was in your lodge, for the Masonic Lodge, did you also have people in chapter, council, commandery, Scottish Rite, and on, or was your lodge more pretty much just lodge?
So with my lodge, so interestingly enough, mine's in a town just about a half hour north of where Red Wing is, and we have an active York Rite. Most of the guys are in Shrine, Scottish Rite. So they're in just about everything. So, you know, it's interesting is in Red Wing, there really isn't as much because, you know, as you get further south into the state, everything becomes kind of an island unto itself. And so it's really not as popular in Red Wing. And so I think that was why having a presentation about Odd Fellowship was just that much more interesting and engaging and able to really make people want to become members. Because when you looked at, like, in my lodge, even now, there is still a certain level of distrust of us joining Odd Fellowship, you know, as if we're there to, like, mine for members or something like that. And so it's been a very interesting process, being one who is in fact serving two masters now. So I've learned a lot about human nature.
That's a really interesting point about the concern of mining one lodge for members for the other fraternal organization. So with that kind of, I guess we're going to call skepticism, how were you able to convince the Masons who did end up joining to be like, yes, let's do this, instead of, no, that's too far gone. Let's just stay over here in Masonry and not even get into that pool.
Yes, I guess I can speak on that. we were able to, the four members that were able to get to join were members who were, you know, interested in furthering their education in fraternal. All three, Nick, I, out of all of them, I was probably involved in the least amount of fraternal activities with my family and everything. I'm not in so many Masonic groups. But there was some interest there in Red Wing. I should have mentioned in our past when Red Wing, you know, where I think we're currently our building, we've been in since 1928 in Red Wing, and it's our fifth building total in our town that we've been in. But before that, our previous building burned, and it was a nasty fire there. And we were allowed to meet at the Oddfellows Lodge in Red Wing. Now, the lodge is long gone, but the building's still there. And so before I ever joined, you know, Masons, I knew about the Oddfellows primarily through, well, two reasons. One was when I think was in high school, there was a lodge out in Massachusetts that was being remodeled. Someone bought it and came across a skeleton, you know, and that was one. And the second was through, believe it or not, I don't know if you heard this one or not, but REM on their classic album Document Number 5 had a song called Oddfellows Local 151. And
Behind the Firehouse.
You look at that now and you read it, it's not painting up. Yeah, exactly. Now you read that, and there it wasn't necessarily supporting Oddfellowship as it was saying that these fraternal societies have kind of maybe abandoned their members, and you know, and it's quite interesting. Those are the two that were interesting. So in our lodge, you know, we have several people. Many of the people in our lodge are in some kind of Masonic group. We have several that just joined actually that are in the Elks Club. So our lodge has always been free, you know, a bunch of free thinkers. I always say, you know, if we can't get along with the guys in Red Wing Lodge, then you can't get along with anybody. We've also used our lodge for the Elks had their state degree team work there a few years ago. They asked if they could use our lodge. So sure, you know. So we were able to get the few that myself, Nick, Tom, and Clayton, were all really interested in furthering their knowledge. And Odd Fellowship just seemed, to be honest with you, it was something different. It was because we already understood fraternalism, and Oddfellows to me presented something completely different than Freemasonry. And I guess that's what, to me, that was really the appeal to it. It was not Freemasonry, but yet it's so similar in the setup and in the goals.
Now, what would you say is the specific appeal about Oddfellowship? Because we've talked to some other Freemasons who've joined the Oddfellows, and one of the consistent answers we get about that is they say it was part of an effort to seek more light, and they found that within Odd Fellowship. But you're saying that there was something contrasting and different that you found in Odd Fellowship. So what would you say that is that was so appealing to you about Odd Fellowship coming from a Masonic background?
For me, the fact that, well, for Freemasonry, it's no secret that it's a men-only organization, you know, for the most part. There are some universal co-masonry things that aren't recognized by most Grand Lodges that exist or that allow women. But for us, it's a strictly male organization. So I thought the appeal of joining an organization, too, that allowed women in is fantastic. And I also think that the goal for Odd Fellowship is a little differently. In Freemasonry, we focus so much on, you know, on our personal growth. And we, don't get me wrong, we do things for the community as well. But what I really thought was really interesting about the Odd Fellows, at least in Minnesota, is what they had a lot of outreach for kids, you know, the summer camp, Camp Fajocha. They offered, you know, the Pilgrimage of Youth. I think it's fantastic, you know, to be a part of. And I think, I just think it was a different way of accomplishing kind of what the Freemasons goals are, you know, brotherly love, you know, relief and truth, the same with the Oddfellows. So they married each other so they mirrored each other so closely that I think ultimately, but yet different. And I really can't explain it. It is a way of taking further light. That's a great way of putting it. But it was just, and also it was interesting because if you look at the history of Odd Fellowship, you know, there's about 300 members in Minnesota. And there's, you know, if you look at Masonry, there's like 7,500. When I joined the Masons in 1996, we had over 20,000 Masons. We're down to 7,500. So it's quite a, to me, this group of 300 people holding strong, carrying on this tradition and doing what they can to keep this thing alive. That to me, like, there's a lot of respect there, you know? So that, to me, that's also one of the reasons why I found it so appealing to join.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I've always thought of Odd Fellowship and Freemasonry as complementary. Mm-hmm. Freemasonry says they're trying to make a good man better. And then, well, what good is that if you don't do anything for anybody else? And I think that's where Odd Fellowship comes in. But at the same time, what good are you to somebody else if you don't manage to govern yourself well? So I think they are very complementary philosophies. And yeah. That's kind of why I've always encouraged people to join both if they're able to, because I think there's lessons in both. I guess that makes me wonder, as someone who is a dual member, speaking to a couple other dual members, what was it that finally made you decide to say, well, that was an interesting program, I think I actually will go join, instead of just saying, well, that was really interesting, time to go have some pie and go home.
Well, for me, you know, it's one of those that I could tell. I think Gary really put it well in that, you know, you have a core of 300 that were able to maintain and keep an organization like this not only alive but strong. And you know, I would even say, you know, when I was going through the degrees, I could sense that there was something different, and for me, it didn't click until afterwards. So you know, when I, you know, I'm a joiner by personality. I love dues cards, and in a way that's probably unhealthy. You know, some people say it's a petition addiction, and that's something I have to get over. But but you know, it's really funny is that with Odd Fellowship, what I really enjoyed about it after going through the degrees is that, you know, the symbol and the thoughts in Masonry are very heady, very head focused, right? And just like Gary was saying about, you know, it's very focused on personal growth, but it's very intellectual and in its push almost solely. And sometimes that can get very navel gazing, right? That's the best way I can put it. But with Odd Fellowship, you know, they use the symbol. We use the symbol of the heart and the hand, right? And that was so clear to me that the idea behind Odd Fellowship is to extend out into the community to our other brothers. And I think it makes a lot of sense because, you know, the origin of Masonry is essentially landed gentry and wealthy folks hanging out with a working class group for a while until they took it over and essentially just shook hands all the time, right? And then slowly started bringing their own stuff to it, right? And that's really the origin of Masonry is rich folks play acting as working class, right? And we have that even now. I mean, we have it today. You know, you have and even during that time, you'd have like Madame Pompidou, who had her fake village that was, you know, on the ground so she could pretend to be a peasant. And you know, and I'm not detracting from Freemasonry, and I think it is it gives a lot to the intellectual, but there's sometimes a disconnect between what we're doing and what we should be doing, right? And with Odd Fellowship, I mean, the first thing when we joined was you have a certain amount that you can set aside for a charity of your choice. And immediately when I heard that, I was thinking, is that normal? Because like when I joined, it was like, thank you for filling out this form and paying us a check to the lodge. Have a great day. I hope you enjoyed the degrees. And in Odd Fellowship, it was like, wow, you want me to immediately think about the community in which I'm living in right now. And that really, I mean, that sold me right there. But I think it was the experiential part of it that really got me to that point.
Yeah, I guess I'll follow up with a question on that then, Nick. When you say experiential, Not getting into any of the things we're not allowed to discuss in either organization, how would you compare and contrast the impactfulness of the initiatory experience and the degrees between the two organizations since you've done them both?
So, and I was talking to Sonny just today, because we actually are creating an educational committee, and one of those focuses is going to be on the initiatory degree. But what I found very fascinating is just how front-loaded the concepts of a life that must be lived well, right? Immediately. But in Freemasonry, that's very much a built and built and built until the very end, right? You don't see that until the very end, and you've built through, and essentially it's like, that is the focus. But in Odd Fellowship, it's an immediate, you better think about the things that you're doing, because your time, the sands in that hourglass are dripping away faster and faster and faster, and you had better start thinking about it now. I mean, it was actually shocking because of that. Because it's an immediacy that I was not used to. And,
I think that's a
that's.
really valid point. I've never really thought of it that way. But when you do look at it, with Masonry being about a self focus, the end is when you pass away. Whereas with Odd Fellowship being about the organization and the community focus, you're just a blip on the radar. And so if you're going to make a difference, you need to get to it. So I thought that's very insightful. I hadn't thought about that.
Now, next question. So, a bunch of Masons in Red Wing, Minnesota saw a presentation and said, "Hey, this sounds cool." So, how is it that everybody ended up joining Friendship Lodge number 50 in Northfield? Now, I'm familiar with Northfield because I almost ended up going to college there. I was actually considering attending college in Northfield, Minnesota. And of course, that was the Jesse James gang last train or bank robbery was in Northfield, Minnesota. So I am assuming the hot dish there is probably excellent, but wouldn't a tater tot casserole be just as good in Red Wing? How did you all end up in Northfield?
I want to talk on that one. We attended their education seminar, and they must have been really wanting us to put an impression on us because they served us brisket, not a chicken sandwich.
Oh,
So
wow.
I was pretty happy with the meal, but I did offer up some petitions right after during the meeting at the center of the floor, and the three or four guys were interested, and they talked it over and whatever. But then that left us, what do we do? How do we start a lodge in Red Wing? We're not really experienced at starting lodges. So earlier in the day, on our arrival, we did tour the building where the Odd Fellows Lodge was at and wondered if that would be an option. We did get a talk to the employee of that business, and he brought us a flyer that was found upstairs. The building is pretty much left intact the way it was. Nothing's been done to the second floor other than run some plumbing and piping and furnaces and that kind of stuff on that floor to help run the business. So that really wasn't going to be an option. We actually signed the four members up and did an all degree day at Mapleton, Minnesota. The lodge there helped out with a degree rally, and we put them into the state lodge number one. They didn't have a home. We didn't know, in the hopes of let's find a place for these guys to locate. They're not all from Red Wings. They're in different communities in the Twin Cities area. Lo and behold, they're approximately 40 to 50 miles, the farthest one from Northfield. That lodge is virtually dying. They had five guys that had members that had been keeping it going. One of the members had passed away, so they were down to their infamous four. We said, "Hey, let's get these guys into this lodge and see what we can make happen." And from there, it turned out to be a godsend and revitalization of that lodge, and we've just been so thankful for that.
Now, after you got them into the lodge in Northfield, What was the next step after that? Because now you've got these four Masons who are Odd Fellows, and at some point they have to dive into Odd Fellowship and then start building that lodge and getting some other members. So how has that process progressed?
That's where I believe Sonny come into the picture. We were doing a degree day the week that she inquired about membership. And I think, lo and behold, they were able to petition to get a petition signed and put her into the initiatory degree that same week that she made contact. So these guys are reaching out and asking people and doing things. So I think that's how they're making it happen. I'm not real sure, but I'm really thankful that they are.
Okay, now we get to ask you, Sonny. So you found out about the Odd Fellows externally. You didn't have any kind of fraternal background other than, is it your husband who's a Mason?
Yes. Well, soon to be.
Soon to be.
Yeah.
Your fiance who's a Mason.
Correct.
And so you wanted a similar experience. What was your process like? And the reason I ask this question is because from us on the inside, we're always dealing with how to better interface with people on the outside trying to get information. And this is a frequent topic of discussion within the order. So what was your experience like, and how would you improve or change that experience for the future?
Okay, so my experience started with a lot. I always tend to heavily research into things before I really take any real action on it. I like to get a kind of lay of the land of what to expect first. So I was doing a lot of research and listening to a lot of the podcasts, thankfully, because my first contact wasn't the most I genuinely don't think it was even their fault, given what I heard about the state of membership in Minnesota in particular. So I hold no hard feelings towards them. But luckily, since I had listened to a couple of your podcasts before, I was like, oh, so this sounds like it might be a kitchen table lodge that just isn't ready for some change and don't quite have their ducks in a row to really take on new members and may not be very active. Because my partner was able to get in with one of the more active lodges in the state for the Freemason side of things. So I kind of wanted to have something similar. And that's where, getting on to Reddit, I just took a chance and put a post out there. And luckily, I had seen some of the activity on there in Minnesota talking about, I think there were a post about the Northfield Lodge, even, I think I saw through there. And so I was just kind of like, well, hopefully somebody is on there since I've seen Minnesota mentioned, and it ended up working out. I showed up and I think I talked back and forth with Nick a little bit, but we exchanged like a few messages, and then I showed up and they said, they talked to me for a little bit. They were very welcoming. There was a lot of people there because it was like everyone from the Grand Lodge, and I had no idea they were doing a degree day that day. I show up and they were like, and you're welcome to join us. So I was like, okay, well, what do I do? And they hand me a petition. And I said, well, I mean, do you have to like ask me questions or something? Like, are you guys comfortable with me? And they were like, yep. So we just kept going.
A streamlined investigating committee.
Right. Next thing you know, you're on a goat, and it's just the...
Oh, we don't talk about that. Oh. Remember, we don't reveal any of the unwritten work.
Critical situations require critical actions, so we broke a few rules and run her through.
Well, now remember, I don't know how it is in the jurisdiction of Minnesota, but here in my jurisdiction, we do have an emergency clause for dispensing with the usual waiting period after an interview and application. So that can be invoked here in Washington. I don't know what your constitution says in Minnesota, but as we always say here on the podcast, consult your own jurisdictional rules. What may fly here in Washington may not fly in Oregon or even in Idaho or some of our other jurisdictions. So we always say it's very important to consult the local jurisdictional rules to make sure that you are following everything the way that you're supposed to.
Oh, well, let me tell you, I can say that the first thing they did when I joined was, "Hey, you look like you're really good at bylaws. You want to try doing those?" And I said, "I suppose."
That's one of the challenges of Odd Fellowship. If you show any kind of aptitude for anything, you get put on that committee. Like I've written a few sets of bylaws here in Washington, and one of the duties of our deputy grand master is the bylaws review process, because every 10 years, every lodge in Washington is supposed to have their bylaws reviewed. Well, word got out, and so the year that I was a grand representative, guess which committee I got put on? Constitutions. I got to go over jurisdictional constitutions. So, it's a wonderful learning experience to do that. And I remember working with, I believe it's the Grand Secretary of Kansas, who's incredibly knowledgeable about that. So I got to do some good learning, but as you know, if you're even remotely good at something, you get put on that committee right away. I got another question for you, Sonny. And that is, now that you have been in Odd Fellowship for a while, what is something that you would like to share to other people that would encourage them to join?
That is a good question. I feel like the biggest thing for particularly people closer to my age, I'm in my late 20s, so definitely bringing down the average age of the lodge by quite a bit. But I think that can kind of be intimidating to some people. Haven't always had a good track record with people of older generations. We've often only interacted with them in cases where they're authority figures, either their teachers or their bosses or their professors or any kind of situation like that. But I think the difference in the members that are still active in these kinds of organizations is there's a level of care that I don't see from even sometimes our own family and friends that just don't understand because they've had different life experiences, don't understand the intricacies of trying to, make it, trying to make it and trying to still be a good person and live up to all of the expectations of the previous generations to, continue doing better. The difference that really hit me for joining was that, hey, I think these people care. And I don't feel like so many other areas of my life where I would be like bashing my head against a wall, screaming, trying to get somebody to notice, screaming into a black void, or screaming into a black hole. And it doesn't feel the same way. It feels like there are people that are ready to listen, and there are people that are ready to add voices to the fire and to keep it going.
I think just the way that Toby asked the question, I don't know any other organizations where you could be asked, since you've been in for a while, when it's been 6 months, would be the way we talk about it. But I think in Odd Fellowship, that is true. When you've been around for 6 months, you've pretty much seen how we operate. There really isn't any deeper, greater mystery of how it works. I mean, it works as a community, it works as a family, sort of. And when you've been there for a little bit, you kind of understand it pretty quickly. And then you also are not in it for so long that you lose track of what you were initially feeling when you came in, which is important because as you get comfortable with it, you can also forget some of the things that hit you as being not as good as they could have been. And it's important to communicate that at a time when you're respected, but also before you forget.
Well, with that, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and talk more about this revitalized lodge in Northfield, Minnesota, and some of what they are doing to interact with the community and grow the lodge. So we'll listen to a nice message from our sponsors and be back right after this with our shout out. And hey, spoiler alert, kids, it's going to an encampment this time.
Another encampment.
I know, another encampment. Don't these kids realize we're trying to eliminate the encampment branch? What are they going around chartering all these new encampments for? So we'll find out about that right after this. Hello, brothers and sisters. Toby Hansen here from the Three Links Oddcast. I'm excited to tell you about a wonderful new book from the Heart in Hand Institute, The Emblems of Odd Fellowship by John Michael Greer. Brother Greer is an Odd Fellow and former member of my home lodge in Seattle. In fact, he was on my interviewing committee when I joined. He's also an acclaimed scholar and author of such books as Inside a Magical Lodge and Element Encyclopedia of Secret Societies. Brother Greer brings his considerable knowledge of esoterica and fraternalism to bear in this authoritative work about the emblems of Odd Fellowship. Richly illustrated with new renderings of the emblems by noted Odd Fellow artist Ainsley Heilig, the book represents the pinnacle of information for Odd Fellows and non-members alike. Anyone with an interest in Odd Fellowship would find boundless interest in this book. The release date is December 20th, so be sure and order your copy today. And don't forget a few copies for friends and family, and one for your lodge so you can share an essay on one of the emblems during Good of the Order at each meeting. The Emblems of Odd Fellowship is a book to be treasured for years to come, so order yours today. Thank you for that lovely message from our sponsors, the Heart in Hand Institute. Be sure and buy several copies of Emblems of Odd Fellowship. Hand them out at your lodge. Help your members to learn. Now, before the shout out, a really quick error correction here. Sometimes we do these shows on the fly with a very minimal amount of preparation. And in a previous show, I mentioned that it took 3 units to keep a Grand Lodge. In fact, it's 3 Rebecca Lodges to keep a Rebecca Assembly. I'm pretty sure the code still says 5 lodges for a Grand Lodge. So we'll see if that changes anytime soon at Sovereign. But for now, we're still holding at 5 subordinate lodges to support a Grand Lodge. And as always, we love it when you actually fact check the show by reading the code. The more members who actually read the code and try and understand it, the better. We are back here with some members of Friendship Lodge number 50 of Northfield, Minnesota, and Ace Adams, past Grand Master of Minnesota. And we're going to give our shout out to a new encampment. We are going back to our friends in Vermont, where they have recently rechartered Green Mountain Encampment number 3. That's right. The encampment branch of Odd Fellowship is growing. I don't know what these kids think they're getting up to, rechartering all these encampments around the country. You know, first Pocatello, then Reno, now Burlington, Vermont. What's going to happen? We're going to have all these Odd Fellows getting into their encampments.
Don't forget Aaron 5 in Illinois, too.
That's right. The new encampment in Illinois. Bah! Don't these kids know we're trying to kill the encampment branch in this order? We don't want them joining encampments and learning about Odd Fellowship.
They want that extra rare expansion pack that is disappearing everywhere.
That's right. I have to admit, one of the reasons I went through the chairs of my grand encampment is to make sure I got the special Fez while we still had a grand encampment. We are back here with our friends from Minnesota. And Ainsley, I believe you had a question for Sister Sunny.
Yeah, so we have been talking a lot of Masonry and people coming to Oddfellows from Masonry, which obviously is not your experience at all. And you kind of came into Oddfellowship as a total neophyte to fraternalism and the whole world of the structure, the ritual, the all the fun secret society trappings that go along with it. So you probably had a very different point of view coming into this. And then what were you expecting and what did you find and kind of what were you looking for? And what, I guess, basically like as a non-fraternal experienced person stepping into this world that is completely just almost foreign in a way to, most of, Gen X and younger generations at this point. So how was that to navigate and what kind of surprises were there and what were you expecting and what did you not find or find at all that?
Well, those are all great questions. Because I also deliberately, as much research as I did, deliberately, I was like, I don't want to know about the ritual. And I tried my best to not find out information about that. So that first experience of showing up, even though I definitely wasn't expecting to be initiated on the same day that I petitioned, showing up and having 20 people in a small space. The inside of the lodge room itself is relatively small, even though we have some bigger meetings. And just all of the sounds, we didn't even have music. It was just the sounds that are supposed to be happening throughout. And it was such an immersive experience. And that was everything that I was hoping and more. So that was definitely a very, very cool experience. It was all of the, as you guys say, the history and the mystery that I was hoping for and wanting to know more about. And then starting to come to the business meetings, I've had no idea what was going on. I was put in a couple various positions just to help because we didn't really have enough members to have every appointed position filled and every necessary position filled. So I've tried out a few hats and the process in the meantime, and I think going through that, it's been like it allowed me to kind of see under the hood of like, okay, we got the performance and the shock and awe, we got that, knocked it out of the ballpark, but how does it run on a day to day? And I think again, no fault of the current membership, just the kind of nature of where Oddfellowship is in the state right now and numbers and the aging population, it was a little disheartening at first to feel like I had so much hope for the organization that had so much history to it. And it wasn't quite at, but of course we can't all have the golden age of fraternalism. So that's where I kind of tried to shift gears and learn more about, okay, well, what can we do? Where do we start? Do we have an idea of what we want our new member experience to be like as we're growing as a lodge. Do we have any kind of that we're starting to do? And that's part of the hope with Nick as well, is to be able to tie all those things together and hopefully create action and create more a more active lodge in the process, and use getting out in the community and networking with other fraternal groups or other service groups to try and be visible, and in that way grow more members that are wanting that kind of thing.
So to piggyback off of that sort of journey that you're on right now of trying to kind of find the niche of what kind of odd fellow you're going to be and how you're going to serve the organization with your skills and everything. So one thing I found as kind of one of those like dive in and pick up a hammer and do something people is I found out I've had a lot of skills that I've picked up along the way just by trying to help the organization be more successful. And so I want to know, like, and that's something I always try to kind of really tell people is that like you will learn how to be a better manager, better people, working with people or working with the public or running a business or any of those kind of skills that you might think you have, but once you kind of approach it from a different sort of angle that's non-business, you kind of learn some things that might actually. So yeah, have you picked up any sort of surprising sort of skills or learned some stuff along the way in the short period you've been a member yet?
I think the times when I felt like I waited for the right time to speak, and waited for the right time even to be critical, because it's really easy to get into a struggling lodge and be immensely critical of everything, and particularly if there's like the only comparison I had was a Corinthians lodge. I'm, from my understanding, one of the most active Masonic lodges in the entire state. So trying to compare that lodge to Northfield Lodge and Friendship Lodge that we're trying to rebuild is like apples and oranges. It doesn't work. So you really have to try and be patient. Be patient with the people that you're asking to change, because the world changes so quickly that the changes necessary to effectively grow into more into the millennials and even below into Gen Z, I think. Yes, Gen Z below that, or whatever letters come next. We have to be able to adapt to the needs of the people that we're trying to encourage to reach out and to join. And so knowing those needs is usually the first step. So I've been hopefully successfully trying to ask, how can I help, rather than come in that I know all the answers, because I don't. And there's people that have years more experience than me that might know a thing or two and might have a good idea about where I can put my energy that would be most useful.
And I can say, as somebody who was a member, is a member, I should say, is a member, past master of Corinthian Lodge number 67 in Big Time Farmington. It was a struggling lodge. And I know Gary can mention the same thing too, is, in Red Wing, they, and I'm sure Gary can tell the story better than I can. But, we were having, every organization has these ebbs and flows. And I think the thing that Friendship Lodge has gotten now is the same thing that I've seen in other organizations that I've been a member of, is that there's an energy level to it. We might not know what we're doing, because I could tell you there's often times that we're doing crazy things or like trying to figure out, okay, so where do you stand? I don't know. Where do you stand? How do you hold a ballot box? I think it's this direction. And you have the one past grand who's been through the chairs a few times, pointing at you saying, oh, you're killing me, kids. But we're figuring it out. And I think that's the thing, is like there's an energy level that I see at Friendship Lodge that I've seen in other places where there is success. And that's the nice thing about it, right? Is that when you can see that energy and feel that energy, you just keep coming back for more because you're just drawing it in, And that's,
Yeah.
I love it.
Nick, you were talking about being a compulsive joiner, and you're talking about the energy in this lodge. Has that spilled over to you wanting to go into Encampment and Canton and Rebecca's Lodge?
The thing is that yes, actually, I've already signed those petitions because, as I said, I have a petition addiction, and literally, I was quivering, shaking as I signed them because even though I don't even know where we're gonna go, other than I know Ace knows, but I'm just excited, and because of just joining other newer and different things, because I just love joining. It's a problem,
Well, I don't think it's just a problem. I mean, as someone who belonged to like 28 or 29 Masonic bodies and then joined everything in the Oddfellows, yeah, it can be a bit much sometimes. But at the same time, I think what you might have known from the Masonic side is there are things you learn in the appendant bodies that become useful in improving your base lodge. And I think you'd find the same thing going to an encampment, a canton, looking at Rebecca's. And you'd get connected to other people who are in other areas and hear about different things that work or not work. And you'd learn about the order in ways that you wouldn't have learned about it in one lodge. The same happens if you go to a district meeting, if they ever have those, where you get to meet people in other lodges and find out that, wow, the way they open and close their lodge isn't like the way we open and close ours. You're both following the ritual, but it's not the same. Because there's a lot of little variations coming from across jurisdictions between Pennsylvania and West Virginia. There are things that we do in Pennsylvania that they only do in the northern panhandle of West Virginia because it's wedged between Ohio and Pennsylvania. I think they picked up some Pennsylvania up there. But there are things when we do the closing prayer of a lodge meeting in Pennsylvania, the last line of that is said in unison by everybody in the lodge, even though it doesn't say anything about doing that in the ritual. It's just what we do. We don't do that in West Virginia, except in the Northern Panhandle. So it's just traveling around, meeting people, seeing different things. It really can help a lodge. And I would encourage Sonny, and if you haven't done that yet, to visit some other lodges and see how they conduct their meetings and their committees and what they do. I know here in West Virginia, we are often very influenced by visits to lodges we've not been to. You go there and find something. My particular lodge, we have a love of music. And anyone that comes to visit us will find us singing and playing all sorts of music across the PA system as we're doing our work. And that has made itself across the state that people started doing that, copying it. And when we picked things up from them, that turned out to be nice ways of doing things and trying to get committees to function a little better. But anyway, I was just going to ask if you had any other interactions with other lodges in Minnesota.
With other lodges, not directly, but through, I guess, the Grand Lodge members who came and did the initiation that I was a part of, and then another one. Oh no, wait. I believe there were a few Grand Lodge members at that second one, but not as many as the first initiation. So through that, I did get to meet some people that were in lodges in different parts of the state, but I haven't yet gotten to kind of travel around, though. That would definitely be something I'm interested in. And I know I've been informed of the date of the Grand Lodge meeting in June, and I do plan to attend that.
Now, I've got a question. Since you've got all of these bright-eyed new odd fellows there in Northfield, what are you doing to reach out to your community and get more people from the Northfield community involved. And I have a specific reason for asking this question. My associate lodge is in Buckley, but I don't live in Buckley, and actually right now I don't live close to Buckley anymore. However, most of the people who are members in that lodge don't live in Buckley or close to it. And so we keep asking ourselves, if we are supposed to be a lodge for this community, how do we connect with the community and get more community members into the lodge? And once I get your answers, I can share some of the things that we have done, which have so far proven effective. But I want to hear what's going on with Northfield.
Sure, I can speak on that. As anybody here can probably attest to, you fall into kind of a pattern of wanting to do more, and then you fall into a pattern of like more members. And so right now we're so focused, we've been so focused on getting members that once we have a few more, we'll be able, we feel like we can be more effective in the community and getting outreach in the community more. Northfield, you know, you mentioned like Jesse James in September. There's all kinds of different things there that we can help out with. Nick and Sonny with their education committee, they're also researching different things in the community that we can do, whether helping some nonprofits. People you know in Northfield from the Northfield Masonic Lodge, really big in nonprofits. They're giving us some leads as well. And that's kind of just kind of get out there and get our name out there, whether it's you know, setting up a stand at the library, handing out some flyers or getting out in the community. It's kind of hard with none of us living in the community. So more like that, we'll probably have to happen on our meeting days, you know, or another Saturday where we can all get together. But that's kind of branching out and trying to just kind of help out. Like I said, especially the nonprofits, some of them, whether it's a food bank or, you know, helping books or something. That's a great idea. And Sonny as well. And that's one, actually another thing that we talked about our last meeting. So, the groundwork's kind of been laid, and now we're moving in that direction and, you know, kind of pooling our ideas, and that we're going to be in a few months or by next month, we'll be able to launch something and really get there.
Well, you know, Gary, I hope you're still okay with me putting the Great Northfield Minnesota Raid movie out there in the public, you know, because I'm such a Cliff Robertson fan. So, you know, hopefully that will get more members. It's really what the young kids want.
Of course.
I haven't heard anyone mention anything about any initiatives that were part of the Grand Lodge. Obviously, I've heard that the Grand Lodge supported you in your efforts to get information out to the Masonic Lodge when they first asked about learning about Odd Fellowship. I know, Sonny, you connected with people and got more information. But maybe, Ace, you could give us a little bit more of an idea of what the Grand Lodge is doing jurisdictionally to promote growth in that jurisdiction.
One of the initiatives that the membership program in Minnesota come up with a couple of years ago was to offer a $100 stipend to a lodge for getting a new member. They would pay the $50 needed to be decided by the new member to go to one of the existing jurisdictional programs, camp, the Education Foundation, the different things that they would name that were theirs, part of the Grand Lodge. And then the other $50 could be donated to a charity of their choice. And it was just an incentive to not have cash outlay from the lodge for receiving the new member. It doesn't pay directly to the lodge anything to buy a new member, but it gives an opportunity for that new member to feel worth. And Nick alluded to that. That was a great feeling, and it seems to be quite successful that they'd be able to not only help the lodge charity work, but be able to reach out to their community charity work. So that was one of the incentives that came up several years ago.
One thing that Northfield has actually been doing, so Friendship Lodge, we've actually decided that we're thinking about pooling our resources on that, because, you know, we it really has created kind of a court esprit amongst the sisters and brothers, because you know we're new. Essentially, we have seed money to go out there into the community, and it's one of those that we all felt that if we joined together on that, that might be able to do a greater good than even just having, you know, the $50 where you're choosing your own charity. And so that really has created even more cohesion amongst our group. So it's been really nice.
Yeah, when you mentioned that you got money to give to a charity of your choice, I didn't realize where it was coming from. I thought that was a unique thing to that lodge. So this is a program that goes anywhere in Minnesota.
That is a program by the Grand Lodge of Minnesota, part of the coming out of the membership campaign. We allot, I don't know, $2,000. I can't even remember an amount to the goes to the membership campaign. One year we bought some t-shirts and gave them to the lodges as a promotional tool for the 200th anniversary. Different things trying to give value to people wanting to join a lodge.
Now, how long has the Grand Lodge of Minnesota been running that particular program, and how successful has it been?
I don't know the answer to that one, Toby. I'm guessing it's probably been pushing 10 years, maybe on various different levels.
Okay.
Is that similar to the program that Wisconsin did a couple years ago? That was something about like they would reimburse your first year dues, or I don't know. There's like they had another kind of membership sort of thing, like sounded like they kind of riffed off your idea a
Yeah,
little bit and kind of made
we
it their own.
I think it did start off originally paying for dues, and I kind of fought against that. I said, no, lodge really can't pay a member's dues. That's up to them to pay their dues ahead of time. We shouldn't be encouraging that. We need to find up a different incentive to do that, and this was a way around that.
Now, one thing that I'm hearing as a common theme is the Grand Lodge of Minnesota has been consistent with their promotional efforts for membership, and they've also been responsive to membership inquiries that come in. That's something that I always try and emphasize when I talk to people about membership and what they can do. Because Ainsley, Ace, you two are on the communications committee with me, and we often talk to other people around Sovereign Grand Lodge about what happens when we try and promote Odd Fellowship. And someone will come to us and say, well, we ran a TV commercial once in 1986 and it didn't work, so we can't spend any more money on promotion. And that is a common misunderstanding of how promotion works. Promotion works through repeating the message several times. There's been one example throughout history of a message that was only delivered once and had a huge impact, and that was the 1984 Super Bowl. Anything else requires repeating the message over an extended period of time. You can say Odd Fellowship is the best fraternal experience there is, and if you only say it once, the message will last for 30 seconds and no one will remember it. But if you repeat that message over and over and over again over the course of 6 months or a year or 2 years, then you're going to get some traction with it. And just like starting this podcast 4 years ago, originally for the first 6 months, we could look at the number of downloads and count them on one hand after a sawmill accident, basically, because almost no one was listening to it because nobody knew about it. It took several years of promoting it and sharing the information. Now we're getting anywhere from 20 to 100 downloads per day. Most of those are from members, but some of those are from prospective members. Like Sunny said, when she said, yeah, I wanted to find out about the organization, so I listened to the podcast. I listened to this one. I listened to Modern Goat Rider. I found out what people were saying about Odd Fellowship before I put in that application. And so, whenever I talk to Grand Lodges or any other unit about how you get members, you have to repeat the message. It's not just coming up with the message. You have to repeat it enough times that people get used to living with that message. And so when people will say, oh, we tried that once in 1996, it didn't work, so we're not going to do anything again, I say, if you only tried it once, you tried it zero times. Because unless you did it 20 or 50 or 100 times, and you did it enough times that it stuck and had some traction, then you didn't do it at all. It's the repetition. In the music business, we have a rule of thumb that at most you get 10% participation from your mailing list. And similarly, we have another rule of thumb that if you start an event, you need to plan on losing money on the event the first 3 years, because it takes time to get it built up big enough that you can make the money back on the event starting in the fourth year. So in Odd Fellowship, we often shortchange ourselves. We'll get a good idea, we'll have a good reason, we'll do something that's going to be effective, but we only do it once, and then we don't see the results after only doing it once, and then it fails and we walk away and go, well, nobody wants to join the Odd Fellows anymore. In my experience, what I have found is that there are a lot of young people, and by young, I mean under 60. This is Odd Fellows young. This is not using TikTok young. This is Odd Fellows young. They work, they go home. They want something else. They want to feel like they're a part of something, and they want to feel like they're valuable. And the way that we keep watering down Odd Fellowship for the sake of expediency, in a mistaken belief that that's what young people want, is the wrong direction. We are giving them plenty of what they can already get. Oh, we're going to have a Zoom meeting for this. Great. But what they want is to go to a location which is a beautiful building where they can put on cool collars and they can do ritual and they can do the things they don't get to do anywhere else in life. And that's what I always try and tell people, is you can't just do it once and say, well, nobody wants to be an Odd Fellow, let's give up. You have to repeat the message often enough that people are aware of it, and then you have to give them a compelling experience when they show up. Sitting around a kitchen table arguing about paying the bills for 40 minutes, doing no ritual, and then eating ice cream is not a compelling fraternal experience.
Well, except for the ice cream part, because that is very compelling.
That is.
And any organization.
I have shown up to events just for the food before.
To get you guys here, I mean, we do have a full kitchen, and Gary is an incredible chef. So if you are interested, we are across the street from Multiple Meal in Northfield. Come on down.
There you go. You heard it right from the two chains.
Thank you for that plug, Nick, too, by the way. Thank you.
And I guess the other option is we could say that maybe we need to do more. I'm not saying we have to put Ace on the old John Madden tour bus and send him around the country talking Odd Fellowship to Masonic lodges. But I think it was a valuable point that some of the people we want to reach are connected to other organizations. Yeah. And then we also find people like Sonny who are looking for something and found an organization that doesn't work for them and want to find one that does. And that doesn't mean you're mining somewhere else for members. Sometimes the member you're getting is someone who wasn't going to fit in that other organization. That is a perfect fit for our organization. But it's kind of hard to just go onto the, I mean, not impossible, but kind of hard to just go onto the street and stop a random person and hand them a pamphlet and say, hey, why don't you join the Odd Fellowship, when they're not the kind of person who really wants to join anything at all, where there are other people who are seeking and just not finding because their community may have degenerated to the point where there isn't anything left visible but a Masonic lodge of which they cannot be a member, or which they don't want to be a member, depending on their thoughts. We're there, we're just often not visible.
I think that would be awesome. I feel like there's also really something to be said that young people and once again, young people meaning, you know, Oddfellows young, not like the so like anybody who is you know, the Gen X and down, we're looking for something to feel empowered by, because we feel very disenfranchised by our society, by our community, by our work, where we feel very unempowered, where we feel like there's very little room for advancement and for self autonomy and to feel special and important. And then you kind of discover this organization that is like, yes, you are important. You can be important if you show up and do the work. And next thing you know, you get put on committees and then you're doing work that is important, even though it's hard and a lot of it's thankless, but it's important. And then in turn, you feel like you're doing something valuable. Whereas like, if you just work, say like a desk job, at middle management somewhere behind a computer, making sure the people below are, you know, handling their tasks so you can report to the people above, and you feel very unimportant. And I think that's something that we have a very, very rare thing that we can offer that is very difficult to find these days, and it's such a pure form.
So now that leads me to my next question, which is, what do you imagine the future is for Friendship Lodge number 50 in Northfield, Minnesota? Do you have people in the community who are asking to join the lodge? Have you raised your profile in the community? Are more people in town aware of what you're doing?
If you guys don't mind, I could speak a little bit to that. I think right now we're very much in progress of doing all of those things. That's part of the hope with kind of using time with the education committee is to start making those connections with people in the community. We're hoping to be able to bring some community members in as speakers, and kind of what I alluded to earlier, because none of us, we are all outsiders a bit in this community, we don't actually know what they need. So step is, let's start making these connections. Let's find other service organizations, talk to city council members, or talk to people that are already active in the community.
Well, that's certainly a good approach to use, networking with other service organizations and community groups. One suggestion that I've heard in the past is, if your city council has an open address time at the end of the meeting, go in there and talk about your Oddfellows Lodge. I know someone who's had a certain amount of success with that. If nothing else, they're letting people know that, unlike what is always portrayed on American Pickers, we still exist as a functional organization, and people can still join our lodges.
We're not dead.
Sorry. When are you coming around again next? Oh, not until next Tuesday. How can you fix me up in the meantime?
And I would be more than happy to travel to Northfield if you get something organized to do another Madden bus tour with the groups. That would work. That was kind of funny that you did mention that, because we did actually do a presentation at the Faribault Masonic Lodge and got a couple members from there too, which is only 8 miles from Northfield. So that was a good one. So,
well, there you go. You can take that $2,000 membership budget or whatever and put it on the Ace Adams Masonic Lodge lecture tour.
Hey, here's an idea, Ace. Just go around to Masonic lodges on their stated meeting nights, blindfold them, put a rope around them. They won't suspect a thing, and then drag them over to the Oddfellows Hall.
Pull them
there
over.
You go.
Pull them over.
That'll show up in a van with like on the side, be like
white van, more, no windows.
Yeah, like more fraternal orders inside. Three regalia.
Yeah, just park out front saying, accepting applications. We have degrees.
Man, I'm getting shaky. Don't say that.
Nobody told about Amos or the Muscovites yet, did they?
It's quite...
The what?
We don't have them here in Minnesota, but
you don't have them yet. But I guess Nick
is going to push it in. I know
he's going to be on the phone to David Shear in about 2 minutes after we're done. He's going to be like, David, how do I get the Muscovite started in Minnesota?
And if he comes over to Ottawa, Illinois in mid-June, he could join Amos then at the Midwest, I can't remember what the Central Division, something, something, something. But yeah, that's a way to, probably the easiest way to get into Amos is to do that. But I don't know how far your residence is from Northern Illinois.
And you might have to wait a little while, but next August in 2025, when the session is in West Virginia, you will have an opportunity if you come down to visit Sovereign Grand Lodge session to get into the Muscovites, because we've got Muscovites here, and you can take it home.
You know, honestly, like when they were selling the Patriarchs Militant to me, all they had to say was, "We carry swords," and I was like, "I'm there. I'm here. I have my own. Should I bring it with?"
You can play the swords.
No, those are special. You have to have our kind of sword.
Yeah, that's right. And don't worry, there's an Oddfellows Lodge somewhere in southern Minnesota where there's a whole cache of beautiful swords that somebody forgot about in the 1970s, and you can just grab one of those.
We're looking for that cash yet, unfortunately.
I'm sure that the Reynoldses can find somebody who can send some swords across state lines if necessary.
That's very true too. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Would that be considered transporting dangerous weapons or across state lines?
It would only be a problem if it crosses the border with Canada, because then the ivory becomes an issue.
Of course.
Yes. One of our department council members had to go up to Victoria, British Columbia, and collect some Canton stuff that was left over there. And of course, there were the old-fashioned ivory handles on the swords. And when you are crossing that international border, that can be an issue, because they're concerned, and rightly so, about the trafficking of ivory. But this is ivory that was harvested over 100 years ago, so it's not really an issue anymore. But they're very careful about that at the border. And so what he did is he had most of the swords in their bags, and then one out that had the plastic handle. So when the border guard came to inspect, he says, "Oh yeah, we've got a bunch of these fraternal swords in here." And he's like, "Okay, you're fine. Go on." So
yeah, when I went across to Victoria, I made sure that I was armed with my bugle and not with a sword that had an ivory handle.
Yes. Well, one other thing that I want to talk about is Camp Fahocha, because that's something that has seemed to generate a lot of interest in Minnesota. To start out with, Ace, what is that camp? What do you do? How does it work?
That camp was a vision of Clarence Brandt, who was Sovereign Grand Warden elect and passed away back in 1954. And he had the vision of a youth camp, and he purchased an island on German Lake, Minnesota. It was pasture land, cow pasture land at the time. And he had the vision of making that into a youth camp and having soccer fields and football fields and baseball fields and flatten out the hill and all kinds of things. And of course, as Oddfellows, that procrastinated through the 60s and into the 70s, and we finally got a parking lot purchased and made some gains that way. But in the 1980s, we built some A-frame cabins, got a camping program going. We can house 40 campers. And they have a counselor cabin now, and we have a week of boys and a week of girls. And it's just an overall youth program that has consumed a lot of man hours of labor, because it involved clearing sumac, it involved building, it involved construction, that kind of stuff. So it's been pretty easy.
All right. And Brother Gary, I know that you've had some involvement with that camp. What has your experience been like?
It's been fantastic. My son actually got in some volunteer Boy Scout hours helping last summer, or last spring, I should say, getting it ready for the summer. I also was the cook for Girls Week. My daughter was able to tend the camp there for the week. It was great. It's such a the kids get there, no electronics when they attend the camp. It's just all, play in the water, build crafts, have, roast the marshmallows. They really encourage the girls to, they can have an alarm clock, but they encourage them not even to bring one of those sometimes. It's just a great, in today's world where everyone's, stuck on electronics, or especially a lot of kids, they're like my kids, they carry their Chromebooks home back and forth to school every day. To have them not to do anything like that, for, 5, 6 days is it's kind of hard at first. After about 2 days, my daughter was fine with it, but it took her a little bit. But it's just a great, great place. It's peaceful, and it's really, I think in the Odd Fellows, I think in Minnesota here, it's probably underutilized as far as, like, we offer the girls and the boys. The reality is, I know they'd like to expand that, but it's so hard to get kids now these days to even go to camp. But I think there's some other functions we could have there. We could have maybe community picnics. We could have, I know there's an event coming up that you'd like to talk about at the camp. I think there's a lot better. There's a lot more ways we'd utilize it, not only for our fraternity, but also for the community as well. And I think Ace mentioned too, for the majority, starting in June all the way to August, pretty much every weekend is usually booked by some group, whether it's a church group or a family reunion group. So it does get a lot of use, but it'd be nice to see it, maybe the fraternity use it a little bit more too. And I know Ace can speak on that as well. So, but great. If you ever have a chance to stop on out, it's open. Anybody can, swing on out. And I think they turn the water on in June and it gets shut off in September. So it's just a fantastic, fantastic resource that we have.
Toby alluded to the successful programming or that Minnesota's having as a membership campaign. I wish that was really true overall, but we're just like every other jurisdiction. We're losing lodges. We did a consolidation earlier this year. Another lodge closed, which the Regalia came down to Northfield. Aitken number 164 closed, and we got their Regalia to go to Northfield 50. Yeah, repetition and talking about degree work. Unfortunately, my degree work experience is my own. I've really never seen it done any other than way the old timers taught me how to do it. And I don't know how other jurisdictions do it, but it was encouraging to hear how these new Northfield people have enjoyed the degree work and the presentation that we were able to do for them. So we must be doing something right. The other thing that comes to my attention or is scheduling of time. Even my time as a young 60-year-old guy, I don't know how people disseminate what time frame you can use to church, what time you can use for lodge, what time you use for the encampment, what time do you use for the Rebecca Lodge, what time do you use for different things. And when you try to schedule degree work and whatnot, it turned into a I can't make it that night, or I can make it this weekend, but I can't make it that weekend. So you juggle all those pieces of who's going to do what part of the degree work. So I came up with a critical thought process this year and going to make use of Camp Cahokia. I wanted to do something that we've never tried before. Oh no, horrors of that, right? I want to do an all degree unit, all degree weekend. And I want it to be a time of reflection along with all the degree work. So we are going to start out on Friday night with the Rebecca degree and the initiatory degree of Odd Fellowship out on the island. And then in the morning on Saturday, we're going to try the first, second, and third degree, reflect on that, have some fellowship time. And in the afternoon, we're going to work with through the 3 degrees of the encampment. And into the evening, we'll work through the mustering into the cantons. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of transition time, but with it being all weekend long and including Saturday evening and into the morning Sunday, there's going to be built-in time for reflection and fellowship. And some people claim that it's way too much information to give at one particular time for degree work, but the candidates never really learn degree work when they do we see it the first time anyway. You got to start participating in the actual degree work and doing the work, and that's how you learn it. So is it too much to ask? Maybe, but it's going to be a goal of mine to try to achieve this year. So we'll see what happens.
I think that's a wonderful idea. It sounds a lot like the Hahn Farm degrees in Oregon, which I got to attend in September. And it's really wonderful because past Grand Master of Oregon, Gary Hahn, has this beautiful farm in the rolling hills west of Portland. Everybody goes out there. Members of several lodges all around the state of Oregon converge on the farm. They pitch in and they have a breakfast, and then they do the initiatory degree, and it's all done outside. And Gary has all the props and all the robes and everything there on the farm, and he's got everything set up for doing the degree work. So they do the initiatory degree, they have lunch, and then they do the 3 degrees after lunch, and then everybody gets together to socialize in the afternoon and evening. They come back on Sunday and have another breakfast, and then they do all of the encampment degrees. They have lunch, and then after that, if there are candidates to be mustered into the canton, they do the mustering ceremony. And it's such an amazing experience, and it means so much to do the encampment degrees outside in a setting that is very reminiscent of what it was like in the biblical times, you know, 2000 or more years ago, when we're talking about these nomadic patriarchs moving around, and here you are in a field with a tent, and your candidate is literally knowing the perils of the rough road. Nick, you're going to love that one. You are absolutely going to love the encampment degrees.
I'm already excited.
Assuming that they are done, you know, properly, dramatically with props and everything, because those are some fun degrees.
We have ACE, yeah.
That idea of doing the degrees like that in Minnesota is wonderful. The degrees are an important part of what brings us together and keeps us together as odd fellows.
So the unique situation on this is that our encampment and cantons are struggling. We're down to the 20 members in the 3 units and associates in every other unit to make it work. And so we either need to make new members there or we're going to lose those charters. And the degrees have been done out to the camp for the encampment, out to Camp Fajocha before. That's where I received my degrees 15, 20 years ago. But none of us are proficient in that. So I did travel to Sycamore, Illinois, last month to attend their degree rally for the encampment, just so I could be refreshed on how it's supposed to be done. And I talked to them, and there were several people there willing to come to our jurisdiction and help with those degrees. So I'm really confident that as I get this advertised and promoted, that I'm going to get some great participation and be able to assign lodges to do this piece of the degree works, and not leaving it all on one or two of us to make it all happen. So that I'm really excited for this event.
And I think that highlights one of the problems that we have is that people think that it's only time to do degrees when you have candidates for degrees. And if that's the only time you do them, one, people who only got them once never really get a chance to learn what's in them because it hits you too much all at once and you need to see it another time to really pick it up. That, and you forget how to do them. One of the things I liked about the Department Council of Pennsylvania was that they would do the full degree, whether we had any candidates or not. It was part of the meeting we had, the winter meeting, I guess you called it, not the regular business session, but a second meeting we had, and we would do that full degree. And if there were no candidates, then so what? There were no candidates. We're still going to do it because it's important and it's part of our ritual. It's part of our process to do these degrees. And even in your lodge, you should be practicing a funeral ceremony and how to do that. You don't need to wait for someone to pass away and then do a poor job of it. You should practice that in your lodge, and you should practice the different degrees It might be a while before you have another third degree that you're going to do. But there's no reason why you can't go through it, because everybody can get something out of rehashing those symbols and remembering how things work. Or they could buy the book that Ainsley and Toby are hawking. But the point is, you can gain a lot by doing the ritual. And if you don't do it, not only do you forget how, but you also don't really ever get a chance to just enjoy it. And that's one thing we try to do in my lodge when we go and new people come in. Guess what? You can be a guard in the first degree. You don't need to say anything, you don't need to do anything, but you can be there and be a part of it, not just sitting on the sidelines where you might be tempted to pull your phone out and start scrolling. No offense to the people who are a couple of generations below me, but you know, they the phones are, you know, almost surgically attached. Being in Gen X, we love our technology, but we hate it just as much. So it's not quite as bad for us. I know
Oh,
I'm teasing
we hate it
Sunning.
too. We hate it
I know
too.
you hate it
We
too.
just
I'm
had
just
no
teasing you.
choice.
Well, and we also gave Sunny no choice. Since Sister Sunny, the second meeting you attended, we were like, "Well, we're doing a degree. It looks like you're a scene supporter."
Yeah, and she
That's a
was.
wonderful thing.
Well,
Yeah.
and I was gonna to speak to that as well. I mean, that was the ritual, like you're saying. I mean, the thing that drew me to the lodge the most, other than some of the esoteric stuff, was community. And just having, like you guys were saying, like Ainsley, I think, was saying earlier, just having somewhere where people will welcome you and welcome your ideas and try to help you. I think one of the biggest things that struck me was, like, I was having a conversation with people that I just met, and I was looking for work, and they were already asking me, well, what kind of work are you doing? Like, what? And it was it I was trying not to mix work into the lodge system, but they were just being so helpful, and just so it was so clear that they were trying to think about me. And that, I think, showing that the more that we can show that, and the more that we can create those experiences and have people feel that, it's so easy in our society today, with all of the technology, to disconnect and to disconnect from your emotions. And I think that's a lot of, and that's creating a lot of trust issues throughout society. And I think that's the biggest barrier to gaining more membership, is learning, how do we actually gain trust? How do we sh trustworthy without just telling people we're trustworthy? Because usually, if they have to tell you, it's not true.
If I may speak on the what Mike brought up about running degrees, whether or not you even have candidates, it's fantastic. I know there's some Masonic lodges here. Nick can comment too that they run 2 degree cycles a year, usually a fall one and a spring one. And whether they have a candidate or not, they run all 3 degrees on 3 consecutive meeting nights. And even like you speak to the outdoor degree out there in Oregon. The Masonic Lodge here in Minnesota, there's quite a few what they call quarry lodges, where they're outside lodges and they'll have either meetings or they'll have a degree worker as well, kind of like in the quarry, like where the stone came from. So it'll be outside. So I think, and I think seriously going to consider proposing to the people, the members of Friendship Lodge, especially once we get the new members in, is running a instead of doing degrees and worrying about, trying to do initiatory here or first and second here, have a fall degree cycle and a spring degree cycle. Because what I think what we're kind of missing out on is a little bit is we're so tied to trying to get members, 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 is we're missing out, I think, helping we could be helping the community better and getting out there more, but instead we're worried about doing the degree work. And I think if you run a fall and a spring one, and then you have them scheduled, then I just think it would run better. That's my personal opinion on it.
Well, let's wrap this episode up here. Is there anything that anyone wants to mention before we go to our closing segment? Sunny.
Yes, I would like to follow up and hopefully counter maybe some of the things that Ace has said. I know you talk a lot about how many members that we're losing and how close we are to losing more lodges and things, but I think you guys at Grand Lodge level, you guys have an energy that you were able to bring to the ritual. And that really, to me, that's the spirit of Odd Fellowship. And that's what brings more people in. And you guys really deserve a lot of props for that, for being able to maintain that through what I assume is years of slow to no growth. And I hope, and I am joining in here with you to try to grow this organization in the state. So I hope we start to see some traction in that.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I absolutely appreciate that, and I know you guys are have been a godsend for me to revitalize my look on Odd Fellowship, because I know there's people out there that are willing, and members out there that are willing to learn and do and see. And degree work has always been a passion of mine, and you know that, so, and it shows.
All right. Anyone else have anything they want to offer before we go to our closing segment?
Yes, if I may add, you spoke of Mike, you spoke of the Reynolds and their smuggling of swords across the border. I would be amiss to, and I know Gene, I believe, listens to these podcasts, to give, if I can give a shout out to them. Gene and John joined the lodge, oh, I bet you 10, 15 years ago, probably as associate members. And if it wasn't for them, that lodge would have, and they joined it out of, it was a historic lodge and they didn't want to see it fail. And they drove about 1 hour and 45 minutes to attend meetings. I mean, that's how dedicated they were to keep that, Friendship Lodge open. So I'd have to give them a huge shout out to them. Thank you to the Reynolds. We wouldn't be here without you. And as far as the Grand Lodge goes, if there's one thing, if you were to ask me, like, could you sum up the Grand Lodge of Minnesota Oddfellows, in a couple words, I would say first, I would say supportive, and second, approachable. There's not a time I don't feel like I could call Alex or Grandmaster Rick or anybody and have them feel like I have to go through like a certain protocol to call them. Whereas sometimes I know, like Nick and I, we struggle sometimes with the way our Massac Grand Lodge is set up, this protocol, and I, and that's not always, but I think if we, yeah, I know if I can email them and like, if, hey, do I need dispensation? Sure, I'll take care of that. Approachable and supportive. I can't thank Ace enough. The whole John, Amanda, everybody, Pat. It's just been a complete wonderful experience. I don't know how else to put it. And thank you to everyone that, Ainsley, Mike, and yourself for running the podcast, Toby. It's been a huge help, and thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. That's why we do the podcast. We keep hoping that we will inspire current members and attract new ones. So with that, we get to move on to the Odd Podge, and this is a segment where we share whatever we feel like sharing with the listeners. Who would like to go first on the Odd Podge?
I'll go ahead and go first because I missed the last episode, so I'm kind of a little behind in doing one. Plus, I'm going to piggyback on what Gary just said. John Reynolds came as the executive officer of the General Military Council to visit the jurisdiction of Pennsylvania, and that's where I met him. And I did a little favor for him, and he took the time to talk to me, a nobody, and find out about me. And he's the one that learned that I was a trumpet player. And he said, "Well, in a couple of years, do you want to be on my staff and be the bugler?" And he made that happen. And you can either thank him or blame him, depending on how you feel about me. But that's what got me doing all the things I did, basically mostly above the lodge level. Although I went to Grand Lodge sessions, I just sat there as a rep and didn't really do a whole heck of a lot except make motions that annoyed people. But, John getting me to come down to General Military Council in 2010 really got me moving on being involved on a larger scale. So I thank him a lot for that, and Jeannie for being so supportive. And that brings me to my Odd Podge item. Most people wouldn't know it because they only hear about me playing with swords and bugles and being a grand secretary, but I do have other sides of my life.
What? No, that's impossible.
Yeah, believe Can't it or be. Not. And our deputy sovereign grand master, Jerry Workman, who's from this jurisdiction and a friend of mine, who's going to be sovereign grand master next year, most likely, asked me to serve as his sovereign grand chaplain. Anybody who's been on my Facebook can see that in addition to my Spartan race picture of me all covered in mud, there's also the picture with me and my family and all my fancy church vestments. So I promise I won't make anybody have to kneel and stand and kneel and stand. But I'm really looking forward to that because Brother Jerry Workman is a wonderful person. And I think he's doing a great job. And I'm going to love to be on his staff. And then again, that does go all the way back to, you know, John Reynolds plucking me out of the crowd of nobodies and giving me that opportunity that I've been able to go to Sovereign Grand Lodge for many years and serve as an officer at the GMC and at Sovereign before. And it's going to be great. I'm going to love it.
Wonderful. All right. Who else has something to share for the Odd Podge?
I'll go next.
All right.
So yesterday was, so in Illinois, it's degree day season where we do our regional meetings throughout the different regions of the state. So yesterday was the degree day for the region that I'm in. I think we're like region three. I can't remember, two or three, something like that. Anyway, so I have recently traded in my little Jeep for a big old passenger van because I want to have a vehicle to, one vehicle will rule them all basically, so I'm never out of room again in my life. And so I loaded up the van and took a busload of us over to Mount Zion Lodge 300 and had four candidates go through from who I brought over to receive their degrees. And so we have four new odd fellows in my lodge, and a fifth person was able to get their degrees that they just were initiatory degree. And then our newly past grand was able to take her Grand Lodge degree that day. So yesterday was a very, very busy day for odd fellowship, and it was 49 people were present at that meeting. And I think we had 10 candidates for initiation, and then 11 ended up going all the way through with the degrees. So yeah, great day.
That's fantastic. And that's the beginning of the Ainsley bus tour, where you're going to start driving around getting people their degree work.
Yeah. And the Ainsley Oddfellow tattoo bus tour.
That's right.
Coming to a Grand Lodge near you.
Now, do any of our guests have anything they'd like to share as part of the Odd Podge?
Sure, I do. I'm assuming some of your listeners know that I'm a blogger over at millennialfreemason.com. That's the one I started, so that's why I hold on to that name as long as I can, because that's who I am now. But I've actually started blogging again because I've really found the Odd Fellowship to really be a very interesting topic for me to talk about. And I'm hoping that my content that's going to be going out there is going to be interesting for others. But, you know, the first one that I've done is about kind of understanding the leadership structure and the concepts of support built into it and how that differs from Freemasonry. And so that's kind of where my first thought is. And I'm using the primer as a kind of a starting point on that to kind of come up with ideas, but then, you know, thinking about the structure of Odd Fellowship and you know, places in which it really succeeds well. And so that's what I've been doing lately. And I've also I was on the Masonic Roundtable podcast for several years, and I'm still waiting for them to call me about the Odd Fellowship one. I'll let them know. I'm an emeritus status. You'd think they call me, but
podcasting is a very exclusive business. I would not hold your breath.
Yeah, it's true. You know, they said, "Hey, thanks for being a host for so long. Who are you again?" No, just kidding.
Well, that's great. Glad to hear that you're including some odd fellowship on your Masonic blog. All right. Any of our other guests have something they want to share for the Odd Podge?
An extension of my all unit, all degree day. We are actually going to do the registration online off of our MinnesotaOddFellows.org website through the Camp Pohocha program page. So you should be able to access anybody that's in the 5-state, 12-state, wants to take the extra expense to come and travel to the event. Please register there.
You mean you're not going to make people request mail-in forms that they have to fill out? I'm sorry, Ace, but this is the Odd Fellows. We don't use any technology newer than about 1948.
Anybody that knows me knows I'd misplaced the applications anyway, so therefore I never have them the day I needed them. So this way, hopefully I'll still be on an Excel spreadsheet and I can really like sort and use the data that's there. Pretty
or you can register via telegraph.
Yeah, isn't registration part of the telegraph code on the back of our dues cards?
That is what the little words mean, yep.
And Western Union does still send telegrams. And the reason for that is because in the case of legal communications, like wanting to end a contract, there is a legal record of when the communication originated, which is why telegrams are often required for doing legal documents remotely. Who knows if DocuSign will ever eliminate that, but there is actually a reason that telegrams still exist in the 21st century, and it's not just because Odd Fellows are used to using them as a means of communication.
And it's kind of pricey to send one.
They're expensive nowadays. You know,
it's like $30 to send a telegram.
Yeah, it's a lack of volume. We need to get the hipsters need to discover telegrams. And
it's called texting.
Yeah. All right. Anything else from our guests from the Odd Podge?
I'd like to say for all of the longtime members out there that might be in similar situations to we need you guys, and you guys are the life force of the lodge and of Odd Fellowship, and it's a very weighty burden that you're carrying trying to pass it on to the next generations and keep it going as an organization. But I think all of the work is going somewhere very good and has a lot of great potential to get people working together again, and you know, actually succeed in what our Odd Fellows creed says of trying to make the world a better place through community.
Wonderful. And Gary, is there anything you wanted to share?
Yeah, you know, Nick and I have had several conversations about how the Odd Fellows, you know, I can take Minnesota, for instance, they have, you know, 300 some plus members. And you look at other groups. I'll use the Masons, for example, because that's one I'm familiar with, you know, 7,500. What the Odd Fellows, I think what they're doing now and the way they're kind of setting themselves up and the way they're tackling their legacy, I think other groups, whether it be the Elks or the Masons or, you know, you name them, should take a really good look at it, because in 3 years, there's a good chance the Masons are going to have 500 people in Minnesota. I mean, so I think the Odd Fellows are doing, I think, a great job when it comes to realizing their heritage, realizing kind of accepted the fact that they've shrunk a little bit, but how do we get bigger? I just really think they've done a nice, at least I can comment on Minnesota, a really nice job of trying to create a legacy, and also at the same time realizing, you know, we need members, but how can we, you know, help everybody? I think that's because I know, like I said, when I joined the Masons, there was over 1,000, now there's 7,500, you know, and I know people are the Elks will tell you the same thing in Minnesota. You know, there was thousands and they're down to, you know, a few thousand. So, that's one thing. And if you come from another fraternal organization, I honestly think that sometimes I think the future of fraternal organizations sometimes rely on other fraternal organizations, as far as like people used to sometimes be a member of four or five things, and now they're just, it's, you know, they're just a member of one. So I think there's a lot of, you know, people join another, it's okay, you know, it's all right. I know when Nick and I joined, there was some a few Masons that kind of wrinkled their eyebrows and, you know, at us, like, well, why do you do joining those guys for? And it's like, well, you know, because it's more light, it's more, you know, it's more opportunity, you know. And I can use, for example, I've been involved with Cub Scouts for years, and I tried to run my daughter's when she was in Girl Scouts, and I tried to run it as a Cub Scout program and failed miserably because, like, it's two different organizations. But I could take a little bit of what I had in Cub Scouts and apply it to Girl Scouts, and it made me, I think it made me a better leader for, so it's every organization's got a little bit they can borrow from. And yeah, I think I'm really excited for the future Odd Fellowships in Minnesota. My biggest goal is I would love to see the Odd Fellows of Minnesota have a net gain. I know it's one thing that Ace and I discussed the first time I met him, was that Minnesota hasn't had a net gain in a long time, and that's if I can do that in my time as an Odd Fellow, that's that will just that'll make me very, very happy.
Excellent. Well, for my Odd Podge, I want to share that I'm going to be at the upcoming Northwest Odd Fellow and Rebecca Association meeting, first weekend in April in Nampa, Idaho. That's just a little bit outside of Boise. And once again, I am working on some educational content for that meeting. I always like to take these regional meetings as an opportunity to share information and to improve the general quality of knowledge in Odd Fellowship, because there are a lot of places where Odd Fellowship has kind of lost its brain trust. And now we're going through this wonderful renaissance with all of these new active members coming in, and they want information. And Idaho is a jurisdiction that has seen some significant growth and interest lately. So I am really hoping that I can make a contribution to that with some educational material. I haven't collected all the information yet that I'm going to be hopefully presenting, but one question has come up many times is if I could do something on member retention, because a lot of lodges will get a new member, they will show up once, maybe twice, and then they don't come back. So we're going to see if we can share some information about that. For our next episode, we are talking to True Friendship Lodge number 52 in San Jose, California, about what they have done to grow their lodge and how they've revitalized it. So we're looking forward to that. Remember, if you're out there and you've got some great news about Odd Fellowship, please drop us a line and let us know. We're Three Links Oddcast on Instagram and on Facebook. And of course, you can always email us at the number three linksoddcast at gmail.com. We need some more suggestions for lodge shoutouts because the list is starting to get shorter and shorter. So tell us about great things that your lodge, canton, or encampment are doing out there. So on behalf of all of us, we want to thank you for listening. Bye-bye, everybody.